Chapter 8, The Give. My life's goal is to be of service to a greater good. Wherever that true calling takes me, I've always been willing to go. My spiritual queen mother, the great Maya Angelou, was for me the ultimate teacher. Only Maya had the ability to reduce me to my 7-year-old self simply by the way she greeted me. "Hello, you darling girl," she would say at the start of every conversation. Her emails always set a loving tone, opening with, "Oh, dearie, oh." I'll never forget the first time she shared with me what would later become a much beloved refrain. "People may not remember what you did or what you said, but they will always remember how you made them feel." What her words so brilliantly remind us is that every single moment is an opportunity to be of service to another human being. That is what I hope will be your takeaway from this chapter. I'm not referring just to volunteering or contributing to a cause, though those are wonderful, worthwhile activities that strengthen us. What I'm talking about is committing decision by decision to a sustained, heartfelt, compassionate approach to life. "We are more alike than we are different," Maya used to say. Imagine what would happen if two people with opposing views came together to inform each other from a position of wanting to be of service. If you're caught in the deluge of negativity and vitriol that we're bombarded with on a daily basis, this would seem a nearly impossible idea, but I believe we're closer to reconnecting than we realize. When I accepted the Cecil B. DeMille Award at the 2018 Golden Globes, my speech caused a bit of a stir. It was not my intention to spark talk of a presidential campaign, but I can tell you why I believe that speech resonated with so many people. In my conversations with men and women from many walks of life, I felt a growing shift, a mutual yearning on all sides for a different way of envisioning the world. There is an eagerness rising within all of us to bridge our divides, to bring an end to vicious attacks on those whose viewpoints differ from ours, and to focus on elevating humanity. What I was trying to express in my speech was that all humans have value and a voice, and I consider it my purpose here on Earth to celebrate and validate both. The sheer volume of reaction to what I said at the Golden Globes is a direct testament to the fact that millions of us are ready to seek out and stand up for what's good, right, and just in our world. Maya once told me that my legacy will be every person whose life was touched by my being here. I believe the same is true for all of us. When it comes down to it, life can be measured in exchanges of energy, positive or negative. What is the energy you choose to bring to the world? Positive exchanges multiply and grow. That's why giving on any level feels so great. You are creating an actual force for good. Most people wait to assess their legacy until their second or third act of life, when there's time to sit back and reflect. But what if, right now, you began to structure your decisions based on how you want to be remembered rather than on what you believe you still need to accomplish? What I'm suggesting is that you don't wait until you're sitting on your porch in your rocking chair to evaluate the character of your actions. Ask yourself today, in the middle of your complicated, demanding, chaotic life, what do I want my legacy to be? And then start living from that intention. As Maya always said, when you know, teach. When you get, give. Let's begin with the beautiful words of Mark Nepo. What do you want to be your legacy, or what will be your legacy?
I would want my legacy to be that what matters moves through me the way air moves and wind moves through a window to refresh another.
Bryan Stevenson has dedicated his life in service of others.
Often we measure how we're doing in life by how much money we make or how many people know our name and all these other kinds of metrics, how many people respect us. I think there's another way of measuring how you're doing, by how many stones you catch, by how often you actually position yourself to help those who need help. There is something redemptive, powerful, transformative about catching the stones that people throw at each other unfairly. We run from problems, most of us, but sometimes we have to run to the problem.
Listen to the wisdom of Thich Nhat Hanh.
Deep listening is the kind of listening that can help relieve the suffering of the other person. You can call it compassionate listening. You listen with only one purpose, help him or her to empty his heart. And if you remember that you are helping him or her to suffer less, and then even if he say things full of wrong perceptions, full of bitterness, you are still capable to continue to listen with compassion. Because you know that listening like that, with compassion, you give him or her a chance to suffer less. If you want to help him or her to correct his perception, and then you wait for another time, but for the time being, you just listen with compassion and help him or her to suffer less. And 1 hour like that can bring transformation and healing.
Here's U.S. Representative John Lewis.
During the Freedom Rides, or during the sit-ins, during my efforts in Mississippi around the vote, or working in Selma, I never, ever thought about giving up and saying this is too much. I never thought about dropping out. You come to that point where you say, I got to go on and see what the end going to be. You have to. You have to get out there and push and pull to try to make things better for generations yet unborn. Each one of us has the ability to resist, not to be quiet. We have to be brave. We have to be bold. We have to use our constitutional rights. If it means a march, a silent walk, a sit-in, a sit-down, or maybe signing a petition, writing a letter of voting, we have to be engaged, all of us, as members of the human family, as citizens of this country. There are forces that want to take us back to another place, and we're saying we're not going back. We've come too far. We made too much progress to stop now or to turn around. That's why I feel it is part of my obligation, my mission, or mandate to reach as many young people as possible. The fight is not over. We have to continue to fight. And sometimes you have to fight some of the old battles over and over again for the next generation. For generation yet unborn, you too can make a contribution, and you must.
And now Marianne Williamson.
The majority didn't wake up one day and say, oh, let's free the slaves. The majority didn't wake up one day and say, oh, let's give women the right to vote. It's always a small group of people, usually considered radicals by the status quo of their time, who stand on an idea that is truly aligned with the ages.
Deepak Chopra.
There's a body, there's a mind, but there's soul consciousness. Mm-hmm. And then when you get in touch with the soul consciousness, you become aware that other people also have a soul, and you communicate with that, and then you realize that you're both part of a more divine realm, and that's called divine consciousness. And then you can go even deeper into that in what is called unity consciousness, where you realize that we are all inseparably one. All the separation is totally artificial.
And now, my conversation with Charles Eisenstein.
We still live in communities that aren't really communities because we don't know the people around us.
Right.
We're surrounded by strangers.
Yeah.
So we feel lonely. If we're not actually separate selves, then our beingness, our sense of being in the world, depends on our relationships. And when our intimate relationships are only in the family, I'm not talking about sexual intimacy, I'm talking about really being known.
Yeah.
When we don't know our neighbors and we're not participating in the natural world, mm-hmm. in an intimate way, then we feel alone. We don't even know who we are. There's a deficit of identity when we're shrunk down into these little separate selves.
Yeah. And this low-level suffering, this feeling that you're disconnected, even though you are in a world where you are engaging with people all the time, but there's this low-level sense of disconnection from community is what you're talking about. I love what you say. You say, on some level, we all know better. This knowledge seldom finds clear articulation. So instead, we express it indirectly through covert and overt rebellion. I find that so interesting. Addiction, self-sabotage, procrastination, laziness, rage, chronic fatigue, and depression are all ways that we withhold our full participation in the program of life that we are offered. Well said, sir.
If you're not a separate self, then what are you? You are maybe the mirror of all things, or you are the totality of your relationships. So that means that anything that happens to anything, to any being, is happening to you on some level.
Ah.
It means that any difficult relationship you have is mirroring something in yourself. It means that everything you do to the world will somehow come back to you. It means that the world outside of ourselves is not just a bunch of stuff, but it's a mirror of self. It has qualities like consciousness and intelligence that aren't just in human beings, but they're in all things. Everything that's happening to the world is happening to us. And whether or not we believe it, we can still feel it.
Yeah.
That's why it hurts so much. And we don't even know why.
Yes.
After my talk with Lynn Twist, I asked her to sit down with my girls from South Africa and share the lesson you're about to hear.
And when you let go of trying to get more of what you don't really need, it frees up oceans of energy that's caught up in that chase to turn and pay attention to what you already have. When you actually pay attention to, nourish, love, and share what you already have, it expands. It's the opposite of what we think. You're a perfect example of that, actually.
I was going to say, amen to that. I've seen it over and over and over and over. When you share it, it gets bigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you share it, it gets bigger.
And when people know that, it frees them from this chase of more and more and more and more and more. Because there's so much energy tied up in that in everybody's life. Even people who are just barely rubbing two nickels together to pay their rent. If they turn and pay attention to what they have, make a difference with it, share it, nourish it, it expands before their very eyes. A shorter way to say all that is what you appreciate, appreciates. What you appreciate, appreciates.
What you appreciate appreciates. Mm-hmm. It's law, actually. Mm-hmm. It's a physical law that what you focus on expands, what you appreciate appreciates.
Exactly. And then you have an experience of enough, actually.
Mm-hmm.
How we have an experience of sufficiency and is enough, how we have that kind of experience is by sharing, by contributing, by serving, by nourishing other people. That's where real prosperity lives.
Here are some meaningful insights from President Jimmy Carter.
We spend a full week every year in some remote place building habitat houses. One of the things that I've learned is that when we work side by side with a family that's never had a decent home in their lives, and we begin to comprehend quite clearly and vividly that their moral values are just as good as mine, and their ambitions are just as great as mine. We realize that in the past, just because somebody's poverty-stricken and deprived of what we look upon as successes in life, that they're inferior. And that's a major lesson I think I've learned in my adult life, in particular since I left the White House, is that people are not inferior.
Mindy Kaling shares what she learned as a woman working in Hollywood.
As a woman who's an employee, often you are the only woman, and you think there's not enough space for me, or oh, there's only going to be one Indian woman, or there's only going to be one minority. I hope I'm it. I can't help anybody else. Those are the terrible habits you learn when you're younger, and when I was younger in the business, and then as you are as an employer, well, if I can stop that anxiety from young women, if there isn't only going to be one Indian woman, one African-American woman, one woman, period, in here, there's going to be space for lots, so you don't have to have that anxiety anymore. I think that's one way that we can help, or that I've tried to help.
And final thoughts on this chapter from Gary Zukav.
Give to the world what you want to receive from the world, because you will receive that.